I would like to speak about a topic which I think we've talked about before, and which I think before I have stated it is an obvious topic. It is not something very esoteric, very mystic. I think I have stated that. But in reality, I feel that this topic is the basis of my own personal spirituality. And perhaps that is also relevant to others. And so therefore, I would like to share it with you all today. And that is the topic which is related to being of service. Now, I know that we have discussed this in the past. We have talked about it in terms of the difference between being a servant, as is often expressed in spiritual circles. Being a servant is, of course, an interesting concept, but it brings one to the level of servitude, which puts somebody else in the platform of the master of the servant, and it transforms free will into something which is a duty, something which has to take place. And it also, to a certain extent, reduces the mutual respect that you may have with others. Now, when we talk about the Supreme, of course, nobody really has a problem with being the servant of God. Yet, I'm not sure if this is the way in which God or the divine beings or even any other being, if they are spiritually aware, would want that there is a relationship. It is not necessarily the best way to have to have a relationship between yourself and the Supreme, or yourself and anyone else. Or even if that person who is the Supreme or would feel happy with that. Now, we've discussed this. I don't want to go on with this point. It distracts me to go on with this point. And the reason it distracts me is because it removes us, myself especially. Let me talk about myself for a while, and don't mind that I do that. It's just that it's easier for me. It removes my personal capacity to feel uniquely connected to somebody else when I have to think of myself as their servant. Okay, you can say it's my pride, or you can say it's my misunderstanding, or you could use all kinds of words to describe this phenomenon. But for me as a person, and I'm not trying to justify this by saying, well, other people feel like this too, although they do. But for me as a person, if I'm going to have a relationship with others, I want it to be a shared relationship. I want it to be a shared relationship where we mutually act as persons. We relate as persons would. I would say in a spirit of equality. Now, obviously, no two people are equal. Some people can do things which other people can't. Some people have strength other people don't have. Some people have knowledge or beauty or whatever. Obviously, between any two individuals, there will always be an inequality. Yet, I like to speak of it in terms of the spirit of equality. In other words, the feeling that we are allowed to relate on an equal level, or more importantly, we desire this. Like sometimes when people write to me, they write to me with all this respect, and I just go, oh, yuck. I put them in this category of, oh, yuck people who are going to, you know, take the butter and splash it all over my back and butter me up in the front and tell me how wonderful I am. And it's like, give me a break already. This is no fun. And I can prove it to anybody that it's no fun by saying the same thing to them. They would just push it away and say, oh no, it's not true, and oh no, it's improper, and oh no, it's whatever. But, you know, you should always place yourself in somebody else's shoes, because I feel the same way. Nobody would conceive it, but I know that the Supreme feels like that too, because it's just not fun. So the concept of being a servant, with all that that word servant entails, all of the subtleties it entails, all of the meanings that entails, all of the ideas that have historically and culturally surrounded it, it just colors human relationships. It even colors divine relationships between divine personalities. Now, that does not mean to say there is not an etiquette. One should, one must follow an etiquette. It is essential and important that an etiquette is maintained, because when we do not maintain etiquette, the whole way in which we relate is breaking down in a very destructive way. And when I use the word etiquette, I refer to how to act properly to others. A very quick example is if you're going to talk with a policeman, there's a certain etiquette there, because that personality represents the law, represents the government, represents a certain force that is controlling the environment. So you have to accept that person's role and your, in this particular case, subordination to that role, and act appropriately. That's an etiquette. Or the same thing in relationship to your parents. There's an etiquette you must follow. Otherwise, the relationship becomes strangely distorted. So in every situation, with every personality, there is a natural etiquette. There is a natural, inbuilt series of, I wouldn't say rules, but I would say standards, which dictate to a large extent the way in which the communications should take place under ideal circumstances. Okay, that is that package. The package of service, being a servant, and the package of etiquette, which is there in all situations. Yet, it would be foolish of me, it would also not be according to my own personal realization or my feeling, to say that service was not the primary raison d'etre, the primary reason, or the primary fundamental basis of my existence. Let's talk about that. The reason I transformed the phrase to be a servant into to be of service, as you already know, so I won't repeat it, was to maintain my integrity as a living being, that my desire to serve is my voluntary desire, that my feeling is to be of service to others. It's my feeling. It's something that initiates within me. It is not by force. It is not my duty. It is not because someone told me. It's not because I'm subordinate. It's not because I'm small and insignificant. It's because I choose to do it, because I want to do it. I've seen many people who proclaim themselves servants, but then kind of got sick of that and then proclaim themselves something else. So I don't really wish to proclaim myself anything. I just wish to act naturally, to let the activity flow, because that's the best way to live, in my opinion. After all, I'm now, as I said in the beginning, relating to you about how I feel about being of service. Okay, that's clear. Or at least I hope it's clear. Now, what does this mean in life? Well, actually, one then has to define what it means to be of service. I know that it's my nature to be of service. If someone has a problem, I wish to assist. But not all the time. Sometimes people, they give me their problems and they say, hey, you fix it because you said you want to do it. And I'm like, Now, something about this I don't like. Something about this makes me uncomfortable. It's like sometimes it seems that when people want something from me, for example, that there's some ulterior motive involved. It's not that they just have this expressed need for assistance, but there's an unexpressed need. And if somebody approaches me with this seeming need that they express, yet beneath the surface there's an unexpressed need which motivates that request, I back off. Because why do I have to reciprocate with an expressed need for help, so-called, which is not really the point, or is not really that which is expressed, that which is felt, but rather only expressed to bring about some other idea. Okay, now that's a very interesting point. That's a very interesting point. And what I think is really cool about it is that, you know, I've often said that when you are having some relationship with others, or you are doing something which is not necessarily finally, I got myself connected on Messenger here. Okay, there we go. Not necessarily, when I'm doing something, I have to back up. I got lost by technique there. And I want to talk with other people, and I feel there's some service which I would like to do here. I have often said that the main service you can do for somebody else is to really listen to them. Because when you really listen to them, you will hear that call, which is basically emanating from all the cells of their body, which is the real assistance they are looking for. For example, people are really wanting you to embrace their energy or to accept their energy, or to approve of their energy, acknowledge their existence, or to love their existence. And often people are doing like that. So I have stated in the past that we have to, as healers, and we'll get back to that point, spiritual mystics are all healers in one way or another. So as a healer, you have to understand what is really being expressed by the energy of a person, and then to listen to it carefully. Because often, that is the best way you can be of service to others. And I really believe that. So why do I become uncomfortable when a person comes to me with an expressed need, but there is an unexpressed need behind it? Well, sure, I know the answer to that. It's because I don't like the way this unexpressed need affects me. In other words, I am more comfortable with being of service in a detached fashion. But if the unexpressed desire for help is something which demands of me something I don't like, I become uncomfortable and tend to ignore that. So what does that make me? Now, to be honest, that puts me in a position, let's say like a physician or a therapist. Ooh, that's nasty. That's not nice. Because it really, if you go to a therapist, the therapist has on the wall, you know, Joe Blow, therapist, PhD. You come here, you pay me money. I sit down, I write some notes or just listen. I help you with your problems. I give you a new appointment and you walk out the door. There is a stated relationship. I'm your client. You're my therapist. You're my physician. I can take or leave what you're doing. You can say, I don't want to be your therapist anymore. We can part ways. But when you're friends, how do you deal with that? Can you imagine the situation of like God? Is God our therapist? When we go before the deity, let's say, or we connect to the Supreme, do we really express honestly? Maybe, maybe not. But what is the nature of that expression? Is it of the nature of a cooperative equality of exchange? Or is it, am I going to God as my therapist? Do I actually come before God and say, these are my problems. This is how I feel. This is what I want. And you are my therapist. And you cannot be not my therapist. There's no conceivable situation where you, God, can be my therapist. Now, of course, when we think about our relationships to the Supreme, we kind of like say, no, 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 I don't think like that. But I would recommend you keep some kind of process going in the mind and an awareness of the thoughts that you have when you are before your deity or you are in meditation in connection with the divine, in whatever form that meditation may appear. Keep a perception open. And unless you are quite evolved, there will be a large amount of motivation within us where we start talking to God as our therapist or as our friend who needs to hear our problems. It's not really so great. It's not that much fun for anybody to be a therapist unless they are getting paid to do it. It's their job. Or maybe out of some love, they volunteer their services for some time. But just consider the Supreme, who is just forcibly placed into that role. Now, let's consider for a moment how we've discussed this before, and if you're new to these discussions, this is going to sound really weird, but ask me about it later and I can explain. But just like we create the guru by placing all of our love and all of our devotion and all of our respect and all of our expectations and our opinions, we place upon whoever it is we accept as some great personality. We practically empower them with all of our thoughts and desires. We make them something absolutely great. And we do the same with God. We're just like pushing all that to the Supreme. So if part of our living relationship within that oneness that we all exist, and just for the sake of anybody who freaks out by that, we are all individuals within that oneness, yes. And we are all placing our love and our devotion and all our expectations and all our powers. We're empowering that Supreme. And the Supreme has to pay the price of being our nonstop, eternal, on-call therapist who cannot ever, at any circumstance, give up or stop the task of being our therapist because we've paid the price. So now I go back to my thought about wishing to be of service and yet sometimes feeling very uncomfortable. So as I've realized it, when I see an opportunity to be of service and I reach out for that opportunity, it's something where I feel very comfortable offering that service, or I really see the need to offer that service, and I really understand how it's a real wonderful use of my energy, and the other person embraces my attempt, embraces my assistance, and there's a real deep feeling of gratitude. Like, for example, when they're in a situation which is beyond their control, or when they're in a situation which they can't resolve, it feels good, that interaction. Because it's all voluntary. It's all like there's a real need. And I use those words, real need. And there's a real desire on my part to assist, to be of service. Whereas in other times, there's a certain demand written in between the lines, where I have to do this for all these reasons in this contract that other people think they have in their heads. You have to do this because of clause 1A and clause 54B.3, where you stated that. Like some people quote things from a website I made and they say, you said on your website that you would do this, so here I am and I need this. And I'm kind of like, geez, why does that make me feel so lousy? And so I was really trying to understand this. I don't usually consider myself a bad person. I think of myself as a good person. I don't think of myself as a selfish person. I like to give. I've always done it my whole life. I always like this reciprocation. I love to be of service when service is actually needed and when I can be of service. So this situation where I feel uncomfortable with being of service, I really had to analyze it because it's very interesting. So I started to see that there are certain things about me which just don't feel comfortable in certain ways in relationship with others. In other words, I have my personality, I have my limits, or I have those things which I can do, and I have those things that I won't do. There are things that I like, there are things that I dislike. Even if I'm totally absorbed in a meditative, spiritual, mystical, way out there in the universe, as far away as I could possibly be, this still happens. And I've been way out there, take my word for it. And it's going on everywhere. Because what I am goes with me wherever I go. And when we speak of ourselves as individuals, even if we say there's only one of us, it doesn't mean that our likes and dislikes disappear as individuals. It doesn't mean that my limits change or what I won't do changes. I might be forced to do anything, of course. Nature has its ways of forcing all kinds of situations. But I won't like it. I'll feel uncomfortable. I'll feel a stress. So being of service doesn't even necessarily mean you do what somebody wants or needs. It has as much to do with me and what I want as it has to do with the other person. This idea of selfless service, I think, is, well, a myth. I know that people will argue with me about that point. That's okay. But I think it's a myth. Because we always have this feeling, this desire. And if we are placed in a situation where we're uncomfortable, and it will happen, if we continue with this ideal of selflessness, there'll always be some friction within ourselves. Now, I would say the healthier way of dealing with this is to feel comfortable in that rendering of assistance or service or help or whatever, and to act with enthusiasm in those ways where it flows in comfort. Obviously, as we evolve, that will expand into more and more areas. But if one is not true to oneself and maintain one's integrity, even in the act of being of service, one will reduce one's effectiveness as a person who can be of service. What I feel is the primary way in which not only myself, but anybody can be of service to others, is to be. Like, for example, I've seen that our house is a kind of retreat. Just like one of my family members was just here, and he wrote to me and said, "Oh, it was so good staying with you guys, and it was like I needed it from all the stress, and it was just so peaceful." And so it's like our responsibility in this house is to supply a atmosphere that when people come in, they feel very comfortable, they feel very rested, they feel very safe, they feel very secure. So if you think about it, it's like having a family. If you have a baby or a child that you bring into your surroundings, you bring into your family, you bring into your home, you make sure the child's room is all painted pink or blue, and it's got nice thingies hanging from the ceiling, and nice sounds. Sometimes I stay at Ugraha's house in Moscow, and him and his wife, Lena, they have this really cute little baby. And this baby has this absolutely incredible little thing that she sits in. It swings and it's got speakers on the top and a little thing that turns around in time with the music, and it makes all kinds of nice music depending on the mood, and it swings in different ways depending on the whatever program you place it on. Absolutely cool. So here you go, you bring a baby into the world, you want to make it the absolute perfect environment. You want to make that baby feel absolutely wonderful coming into your home. Now, this is the way in which you nurture, the way in which you nourish, by supplying an atmosphere which is so nice, so nourishing, that other people can feel relaxed, can feel comfortable. Because in that situation of relaxed comfort, they can actually do and be their best. Extend that out of your house, wherever you may be, with whomever you may come in contact with. Wherever you may come in contact with another human being or another animal or a plant or any living entity, to offer them an environment of safety and security. Okay, put aside for a second, there's a lot of crooks and criminals and creeps in the world. I got it. And of course, I have my opinion why they are the way they are, and it's usually a lack of this environment, but that's another thing. But in general, most people are not bad. And even the bad ones are not really that bad, but it's a question of environment and behavior and so on. But anyway, if wherever you go in whatever situation you're in, you let that same mood go with you, then you are like a traveling mystic energy of healing, of nourishing, of stability. You know, you can talk a lot about all kinds of other mystical things, but really, what service does it render to anybody that somebody can walk on water, for instance? Don't get me wrong, it's really cool to walk on water. It's really cool to do, you know, to bring grapes from another part of the world. It's cool. I'm not complaining. But really, what does it do for others? It just puts you in awe and reverence of this mystic. You think, boy, this person's really fabulous. But what do you get out of it? The real benefit or the real being of service would be to do something for the other person. So when you, for example, are an atmosphere of security, an atmosphere of stability, an atmosphere of nourishing other person's environment, and by being a nourishing environment, to offer to others a means by which they can really evolve, simply by your energy dimming or muffling the noise and distortion that most of us carry around with us in our active consciousness when we're not aware. And that is really a wonderful thing. I consider that the primary service. I don't consider any other form of service more primary than this, because it's a universal act. Because not only does it affect an individual, whatever body that individual may have, even animal, bird, or whatever, plant, human, great personality, I don't care. It affects every individual, but it sends out a vibration into the atmosphere which starts to cleanse the distortions that are in the atmosphere today. So, as far as I'm concerned, a person who would simply sit in meditation and radiate this healing energy is a real saint. They don't have to go anywhere. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to write anything or speak anything or perform any act. They simply purify. Purify means to take away distortions which are unnatural. It means to take away all those energies which do not naturally appear and which are appearing because of some disturbance that are related to stress. Actually, most distortion is stress related. If you think about the situations of ages in the past, are historically spoken about in the Vedas at least, there's this Satyayuga, this golden age. Some people even say that that age is approaching again within this present age we have. But in any case, in that age, it was an age where this nourishing peace and stability was everywhere. That was reflected in nature, that was reflected in people. There was not even a need for government. There was not a need for anything, because it, even you could just eat whatever came out of the ground. It was all very eatable, very useful in all ways. And you would sit in meditation as the active spiritual principle, which is also why I think this meditative principle is so important specifically now. And just emanate by the nature of the expanding spirit of the mystic, this love, this spiritual energy, this nourishing spiritual energy. And because others were engaged in that, the weather would reciprocate. The nature would reciprocate. Everything would support and be part of this nourishing nature. Therefore, I say this is the primary service. Okay, that doesn't mean it's the only service, but it's the primary service. The foundation, the fundamental service that we may all participate in. And our responsibility in this primary service is to bring ourselves to such a state within that we are embracing ourselves, embracing our primary fundamental energy of service, and just create that atmosphere within us that may expand without or outside of us in such a manner that others will enter into this atmosphere and find a healing energy. And when you feel like that, you immediately are sensitive to the disturbances. And as you become a more expert mystic, you learn how to neutralize the disturbances by transforming the energy of those disturbances, or just burning them up. In the healing practice, the first work is to take away the disturbing energies. But what are you going to do with them? Are you going to take away disturbing energies and send them somewhere else where they can be disturbing? What's the use of doing that? You're simply taking the problem and moving it somewhere else. In the idea of there being only one of us, which is an essential point for this primary service attitude, because you know that you're not alone, and that when you are acting in this way to help or assist others by bringing them into your stability, your nourishing environment of safety and peace, that it will create the perfect atmosphere for others, and that will be the best thing for yourself. It's a win-win situation. So when one is like this, that one would not take the disturbing energies from one place and put them somewhere else. One would only consider purifying those energies. Now, some people talk in terms of transformation. Yet I would very practically speak about transformation, because it's like you know, how do you turn evil into good? I mean, you might be able to do it if you were some real incredible mystic. But if you think about even the Mahabharata, for example, evil was transformed into good by its being destroyed. So I take that very practical example, and in a healing practice, would take negative energy and burn it, incinerate it. Because once you incinerate and it becomes psychic ash, and then you even blow that away, disperse it within space, it does not settle on any other location and be a disturbance. It's just gone. And I think that's the best way to deal with these negative disturbing energies, is to just incinerate them. I do not mean incinerate people. I mean incinerate the distortions of energy that people manifest when they are not in the right mind or consciousness, or when they are so agitated by the situation of their lives. So the first thing you do is cleanse away. But then your responsibility as a cleaner is to properly get rid of the refuse. And then what's the next step? To just allow the person to totally relax. And what's interesting, I found also in healing work, is that when you remove the disturbing energies, the distortions, a person instantly relaxes. Sometimes when I take some disturbance, I'll just use that word because it's easier, I'll take some disturbance out of a person's heart, they go, even if they're totally practically in an unconscious state, they go, oh. It's like, relief. Because that stress in the heart was pushing on them. So just let it go. But to even get to the point where you can get somebody to let it go, they have to be relaxed enough and feel the safety of your energy to say, yes, I trust here that I can let go and not be exploited. Because people are always afraid that if they let their guard down, if they stop being defensive, they're going to be hurt somehow. So in a healing environment, and after all, when we talk about the primary means of being of service, it's a healing environment. So in a healing environment, the first responsibility of the healer, or the first responsibility of the person who's primarily creating this ambiance of security, is to allow people to feel so secure and safe in themselves, they can let go of all of this distorting, disturbing, agitating stress that is artificially covering them. And when that is done, they just relax into themselves. They can be themselves. Even so, they can be. They can understand their essence. They can just live as essence. And then in turn, be an active part of purifying this planet, purifying that which is around this planet, reverberating purifying energies throughout the whole universe. This is everybody's responsibility. It's everybody's responsibility to get rid of their own personal distortions and to share in a cooperative way that creation of a nourishing environment, because it is the revolution away from the disturbing and very nasty conditions which were in this world towards that atmosphere which is enlightened, towards that reestablishment of the natural way of being. So as spiritual mystics, and all of you who have been partaking in these discussions for the last 5 years, and even before, are spiritual mystics, and you can't avoid it. It is your responsibility. See my finger pointing? How does that look? Here we go. There you are. Finger, you. Oh, there you are. I got you now. You. It's your responsibility to accept and embrace that you are a spiritual healer. And your primary service is to be an abode of security, safety, and peace that others may find shelter in. Once that's there, sure, there's a million things you can do. But unless you've got this part down, the other things are just activities and therefore may be useful, maybe not. And sometimes when back to my personal problem, when I see people approaching me with these ulterior motives, I see people who are not accepting that primary responsibility, who think they can remain agitated, distorted energies within, and that some other person external to them can reach in and fix it all. It doesn't work like that. You can't reach in and fix when somebody's holding on to their disturbances within. Even, God himself or herself would not do it.